And now it's time for Active Voice Radio. Welcome back here to Active Voice Radio this week. I'm your host, Chris Goldstein. More information about our program is available online at activevoiceradio.com. Well, I just got back from San Francisco, California, and it was an exciting trip out to the Normal Conference 2009. Also got a chance to meet with the owners of many medical marijuana dispensaries in Oakland and in San Francisco and all over California, really. But I got a chance to tour, too, in Oakland. Also, I want to thank everyone who contributed to your public radio station during Active Voice Radio in these last few weeks of public radio's Fall Fun Drive. That's what keeps information like this out there. So thank you. Thank you very much for your contributions. Public radio is real freedom on the airwaves. And Active Voice Radio is proud to participate in it. Thank you for your contributions out there. San Francisco was a whirlwind. I met with leaders in the marijuana reform movement across the country. I heard a lot of very invigorating speeches and saw a lot of very interesting panels. And touring your facilities was definitely a highlight for me. But also, there was a very interesting panel happening at the conference. That panel is called Putting the Mexican Cartels Out of Business. There were a number of experts on that panel, but leading it off is someone who's been here on Active Voice Radio before. But although I've interviewed him, this is the first time during this conference of just last week. It was the first time I got to hang out with him a little bit more informally. This is Norm Stamper. He's the former police chief of Seattle, speaking for the group Law Enforcement Against Prohibition, LEAP. They can be found online at http://. You know how that is. LEAP, L-E-A-P dot C-C. Now, LEAP, Law Enforcement Against Prohibition, is a group we've featured here on the program before, and it's a group that I sometimes volunteer for. I'll work at LEAP tables, at events and the like. But Norm is a very powerful speaker from LEAP. Law Enforcement Against Prohibition is current and retired law enforcement who speak out against the so-called war on drugs. And Norm's approach on marijuana policy has been particularly effective. Since Seattle has decriminalized and deprioritized marijuana within their city limits quite successfully. Now, Norm's successor, Gil Krulikowski, is now the drug czar, the director of the Office of National Drug Control Policy there at the White House. And he got some questions about that. So I want to bring you Norm Stamper, former Seattle police chief, now a speaker for Law Enforcement Against Prohibition, in his 2009 speech at the Normal Conference just last week in San Francisco, California. He's leading off the panel, Putting the Mexican Cartels Out of Business. And in parentheses, that's putting them out of business by legalizing marijuana here in the United States. So here's Norm Stamper, former police chief of Seattle.
Policing as it ought to be and policing as it is. As I invoke the tension that exists between what we have and what we want, I'd like for you to be inventorying, if you will, your own personal experiences. What has happened to you, to your organization or agency, to your friends, to family members? Experiences both positive and negative, but I'd like for you to sort of work with me in thinking about how you see a vision of policing as it ought to be, and a definition of the real world situation that we face in law enforcement. So I'm going to hereby introduce this tension. I see, this is a vision, I see police officers who recognize the manifold ills of the drug war, who have come to appreciate it as having done far more harm than good. I see police officers who reach out to all communities, and particularly as it relates to those who use drugs, and who, in fact, are the victim of drug abuse as fellow Americans, as fellow human beings. I see police officers who embrace the right of adult Americans to put into their systems anything they choose. I see police officers from the chief of police to the newest cop on the beat reaching out to help community service providers and drug reform organizations achieve some level of sense and sensibility in American drug policy. I see police officers who honor the Constitution of the United States, who embrace every person's civil liberties, and work as hard to fight predatory crime as they do to embrace and protect the Constitution. That's what I see. I see police officers who also accept the responsibility for detecting, apprehending, and assisting in the successful prosecution of people who hurt other people, who in this context drive impaired, furnish to a kid, abuse a spouse, beat a child, rob a bank, commit a burglary. In short, police officers who recognize both their public safety responsibilities, their fealty to the Constitution of our country, and the need to treat everyone with dignity and respect. That's my vision. You may be asking, what world do you live in? What did you smoke for breakfast this morning? That is my vision. Now, let me talk about the current reality as I see it. The current reality as I see it is that we have many police officers, a growing number of police officers, who embrace precisely the vision that I have shared with you. In short, they recognize the horrible damage done by the drug war. They recognize the value of reaching out to all communities and working to be part of the solution and not the problem. Many of those growing numbers of police officers are members of law enforcement against prohibition, and I'm very proud to stand with them. At the same time, I also see as part of the current reality, police officers from the chief in the corner pocket to that newest beat officer, to the narc, to supervisors, managers, police executives, sheriffs, superintendents, commissioners, who believe that the drug war is a righteous war, a good thing, who believe that all that's needed to win that war is to throw more money at it and develop greater political resolve in order to win it. Part of the current reality is we have police officers who dip into the pockets of their fellow citizens, extract a baggie of marijuana, and convert it to their own use. I see police officers who, having seized contraband, set themselves up in business to engage in commerce in that contraband, and who, fostering that business, engage in a continuing criminal enterprise using such things as extortion and bribery and kidnapping and robbery and even, in extreme cases, murder in order to grow their profits, expand their markets, or protect same. I see police officers for whom the Constitution means nothing, police officers who rigorously and systematically express their disdain, if not their hatred, for not only drug dealers but drug users and the people who defend those users, whether they defend them legally, medically, emotionally, spiritually. I see police officers for whom the last thing they could imagine doing is sitting down with service providers or drug reform organizations to ask, how can we keep drugs away from our kids and out of the schools and behind the counters, if I may borrow Madeline's expression? How can we make our neighborhoods and our communities safe, healthy, and free for adult Americans to exercise their rights. And yet, we have police officers who take precisely the opposite view. I see police agencies as part of a much larger complex of industries, private and public, that not only defend the revenues they receive, but work to expand those revenues, who, if you will, have become addicted to a revenue stream that finances the drug war. You can certainly include Big Pharma. You can include the prison industrial complex. You know the list. It's long and it's depressing. But I see police officers who are very clearly part of that pattern of addiction, typically to federal money, in order to grow their ranks and to continue to prosecute this unholy drug war. So that's a little bit of what I see as the current reality. There's another current reality operating right here, right now, and that is I can't sustain this tension much longer. I do hope you feel my pain. It's hurting, literally. It's just a chicken shit rubber band. It's hurting. If you can't see it, the tips of my index fingers have turned one weird purpley-green color. Circulation is being cut off. I am beginning to shake. My right rotator cuff is making some unpleasant noises. So is my left, come to think of it. I won't be able in a few minutes to string together a simple declarative sentence unless I reduce this tension, if you will, between what I want and what I have, what I see for American law enforcement in the future, and what I know to be the current reality. So I've got to reduce this tension. Most people examining this tension, either as some abstract theoretical premise with very real-world consequences for the guy who's demonstrating the tension, or they see it in their real-world existence as a drug policy reformer, as a community service provider. And they recognize what that tension does to them, even if they can't name it. They realize, for many of them, that the only way they can reduce this tension, or they have come to accept, I should say, that the only way they can reduce this tension is in this direction. In other words, compromise one's vision. Why, as I used to tell my officers in San Diego, where I spent 28 years, in Seattle, where I spent 6 as the chief of that organization, we were the best police department in the country, the most effective crime fighters, the most dignified and respectful service providers, that agency that rigorously rejected racism, sexism, homophobia, that police department that treated one another and the community it served with dignity and respect, that police department that established the moral compass for behavior on the streets and in the offices. That's the best police department in the country. Why would you want to be anything less than that? Why would you want your community service organization, your dispensary, your drug policy reform organization to be anything less than the best? Why apologize for that? Well, the reason is it hurts, because we live in this current reality. So one of the things that I might have said, either in San Diego or in Seattle, is, isn't it just a little presumptuous? Isn't it a little pretentious, maybe, to consider yourself the best police department in the country? Why not, using Seattle as my frame of reference, why not the Seattle Police Department as the best police department west of the Mississippi? Not the best in the country. That reduced the tension a little bit. Why not the best police department in the greater Pacific Northwest area? Ah, another release of some tension. If that's not enough, then why not the best damn police department in King County? Okay. More tension has been released. I'm feeling a little better. It's still not good enough. Why not drop all pretense of excellence and competence and community partnership, authentic community partnership, and just simply resign ourselves to this reality? And the way I resign myself to this reality is taking the picture of a banner that would sit under the under the seal of the city of Seattle on all of our police cars. It would find its way into every bit of stationery within the bureaucracy. The Seattle Police Department, hear this, read it, picture it, and be inspired. The banner says, "We're no worse than anybody else."
Okay. This is Active Voice Radio. I'm your host, Chris Goldstein. We're listening to former police chief Norm Stamper at the 2009 Normal Conference in San Francisco. More information about Norm and his group, Law Enforcement Against Prohibition, available online at activevoiceradio.com and leap.cc.
Tension's gone. Tension's gone. It's gone. So is my dream. So is my reason for existence, at least professionally, if not personally. So is my hope, my optimism, my belief that we can, in fact, make a difference in this world, that we can, in fact, engage the police in meaningful drug policy reform, that we can, in fact, help police officers at all levels and across this country and throughout this state accept responsibility for reason and sanity, for justice and compassion in our drug policies. But I've got my health to consider. This is intended, by the way, this pressure, to symbolize all those internal ailments that are stress-related, that are distress-related, that contribute to apathy and to burnout, that contribute to a certain brittleness among us as we face the real-world challenges of dealing with a recalcitrant, obstinate, hostile law enforcement agency. Or if I dare say, as we approach the issues of which initiative to support, if any, which organization deserves our funding dollars, how we behave toward one another as members of the broader drug policy reform movement, how, in short, we live our lives. And if you think this is purely professional, you know better than that. It has to do with our relationships, with our significant others, with our friends and families, with coworkers and with colleagues across the block and across the country. It really has to do with how we live our lives. But that's sort of another story. There's one other aspect of the culture of policing that represents the current reality, and some of you have been exposed to this. I think there was mention of it the other day. There is a new truth emerging. It's not new. It's a truth that's being brushed off and reintroduced with great vigor. And that is, if you are an American police officer in virtually any city, and you say something like, marijuana is good, or marijuana is not so bad, or marijuana is certainly safer than alcohol, please buy that book. It is a real important book. If you say, I think the drug war is actually hurting people, you stand to be stigmatized and ostracized. You stand to have your name, your identifier in a police-only blog removed from that blog. The culture of American policing is very well defended and deeply promoted within the ranks. There are three things I think that I would like to say as I wrap up my prepared remarks and speak at you and hope that there might be a little time for questions or conversation, at least brief time. If we really want to understand law enforcement as the missing link in cannabis reform, if we want to understand how to invite them into the process or at least neutralize their opposition, there are many things that we can do. The most basic of the three things I think we can do are these. First, understand the structure of American law enforcement. It's paramilitary, it's bureaucratic, it's complex. That's a subject for another venue, another setting, another conversation. But unless you really understand the way the molecules are organized, unless we really understand the institution of American policing, we will never comprehend its culture, its behavioral artifacts, from the uniforms to the chit-chat to the way police officers interact with one another and with the community. We'll just never get it. It's hard. It seems impenetrable. It seems impossible for us to even develop a vocabulary on some occasions that will allow us to have this conversation. And yet it's critical, which leads me to the second suggestion, if you will, for helping us all deal with this problem of police non-involvement with or hostility toward drug policy reform. And that's get to know your beat cop. Get to know the police officers who work in and around your neighborhood, who work around your dispensary, who engage in practices that typically but not always reflect the policies of the organization that are traceable to the structure of the organization. So by humanizing police officers, by refusing to dehumanize them, by engaging them in conversation, by asking them to your meetings, by recognizing the sensitivity if you operate a dispensary, for example, of inviting uniformed police officers during peak business hours, it's probably not the way to get to know your average beat cop. But it's so terribly important. You want them to respond to threats to your security and safety? Are you concerned about burglary? Are you concerned about somebody ripping off your patients in a co-op, for example, who are bringing medicine to you? If you want to talk about safety and security and measures that might, in fact, be jointly undertaken, the best way to do that is to forge the relationship first, to really get to know your beat cops. Know your police chief. You say, well, he, she won't talk to me. Well, that person works for you. You do, in fact, it's a cliche, but it's true, pay that person's salary. And it's very important to get to know the chief and a cop on the beat, and as many people in between at the precinct or area level as you possibly can. And then the third thing is to join every drug policy reform organization. There is nothing that prevents a member of DPA from joining LEAP or vice versa. What's wrong with a LEAP member joining NORML? We add our names to the ranks. We grow our organizations. Some people will be active. Some people will be able to provide and willing to provide funding for those agencies. But I make this personal appeal, and that is consider joining Law Enforcement Against Prohibition. We do see ourselves as an umbrella organization, as it were, because anything that results in the achievement of our mission will benefit every other drug policy reform organization and every community-based organization. And besides, if you sign up, I get a toaster oven. Leap.cc. I've now done my Leaply duty, which is sponsoring my trip to the Bay Area. And I want to conclude on one thing. In reducing this tension, you can reduce it emotionally. You can grow tired and weary. You can. That's not, by the way, involuntary. See that little finger doing its magic? That's my finger working its magic. That's my system working its magic. We can respond emotionally, or we can respond with personal mastery, and I'll end on this note. There are many people within the ranks of drug warriors who have faced guns, who have been wounded, who have put their lives on the line for whatever dubious purposes, who are really bold and brave. And there is nothing to stop us from developing that same kind of boldness to become anti-drug warrior warriors, if you will, and that's achieved through personal mastery. That's achieved if you're afraid to contact your local police or set up a meeting with the chief or the precinct captain. That's achieved by working into our fear, not burrowing under it or weaseling around it or vaulting over it, but rather going directly into the fear. Because you see, when you get about halfway there, you're at the half-life of what's called fear. Your body's humming to the tune of fear. Every cell in your system is resonating with that fear. That's a good and juicy thing, by the way. It's a gift to our bodies and to our souls. I'm doing something that matters. I'm doing something that's scary. I'm doing something that will, on the other side, render me fearless. And I think we've got to be as fearless as the most intractable drug warrior out there. Thank you very much.
Well, everybody, thank you so much, Norm, and I thank you on behalf of everyone. We also have about 6 minutes to take some questions, so if you'll be brief with your questions, we can move right along and stay on schedule today. Okay, Douglas Green is back there. Doug, introduce yourself, please.
Doug Green, Cures Not Wars, New York Normal. Thank you, Mr. Stamper. I only wish that more law enforcement professionals felt free enough to speak out like you have. I was wondering if you could briefly say a few words about Gil Kerlikowske. I was talking last night. In February, the Obama administration is going to be coming out with their first drug review strategy. I don't know how much input Gil Kerlikowske is actually going to have into that. If you could say a few words about him. And also, what do you do about an out-of-control police department?
If you'll permit very brief answers that obviously deserve much elaboration. I think, taking your last question first, what Harry and Deborah have done is an incredible service to our movement by identifying the trends and patterns within NYPD. How do you deal with a runaway police department, an out-of-control police department? Reclaim it. It is yours. The police in America, this is not just rhetoric, the police in America belong to the people, not the other way around. That means organizing, mobilizing, agitating, educating. It also means treating them with a kind of firmness that the resolve requires, but also with dignity and respect. Forget the name calling. Forget I'll stop there. Gil Kerlikowske was my successor in Seattle. He made some really positive noises early on in the confirmation process. He supported, in some cases reluctantly, some initiatives in Seattle after first opposing them. He certainly supports things like needle exchange and a few other harm reduction approaches. What he has also said, and I find this tremendously disturbing, is that marijuana is a dangerous, addictive drug with no medicinal value, and that should, in fact, remain a Schedule I drug. That's not science. That's not data, which he said he would rely upon. It's early in the administration. There is much on the plate of President Obama, as we all know and understand. I personally believe some slack needs to be cut to both of these gentlemen, even as we work to educate, or if you will, cause them to unlearn certain truths. Much more could be said, but I'm running out of time. Yes.
And you heard the questions there at the end. Norm Stamper again, former police chief of Seattle there, and now speaker for the group Law Enforcement Against Prohibition. Some other LEAP speakers who really stick out and folks who've been here on the program are Jack Cole, the founder of LEAP. So this group of law enforcement officers in LEAP have become quite a powerful voice in this movement to change our policy when it comes to marijuana and when it comes to medical marijuana. So, again, that was Norm Stamper tonight. More information about him on our website at activevoiceradio.com. Next week here on the program, we're going to bring you some of that, putting the Mexican cartels out of business. Again, I'm your host, Chris Goldstein. Thank you for listening this week. Thank you again for participating in fall fund drives in public radio around the country. Thank you for your support, and everyone, have a wonderful week.